Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, courtesy of NintendoWorldReport.com. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and joining me tonight, Mike Sklens.
Hello, everybody out there in internet land.
And Stephen Wittyman Rodriguez.
Hi, everybody in internet land. I just said what you said.
Yeah,
how unoriginal.
Did. Been riding my coattails forever.
this is actually the first time in many weeks that Mike and I are not recording this next to each other, as I am in Atlanta visiting my brother. And
too bad
I
you couldn't get
in.
Lindemann. I love Lindemann. That dude is so funny.
Perhaps next week, because I will be in for another week, so maybe next week.
Awesome.
I don't know.
We can get
but
Lindemann.
You know who is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
you know who is coming
it.
Back? You know who is coming back next week? Evan freaking Birchfield.
I think we might devote the whole episode to Evan, like, debunking what have the last 20 episodes of Radio Free Nintendo.
That would be a lot of fun, and I think that the
and you know what? It would be even better if we can get John Lindemann on that episode.
Excellent, excellent.
Just sit back and watch
folks.
The fireworks.
Absolutely. Let's jump right into new business. And, boys, do we have anything new in business?
I've got nothing, unfortunately, this week.
Wendy, you've always got new business. What's new?
Well, I just beat Resident Evil 4 in Professional.
Sweet.
Oh, man, that game is so much fun, and when it's a lot harder than going through it the first time.
Yeah.
I think I had a better time with it going through. This would be the third time I've gone through it than I did the first time on the GameCube, so it was great. And
I was actually playing Resident Evil 4 on Wii earlier this week, because my brother has never played a Wii before. And so this week we've been trying out Wii Sports and all that good stuff. And he actually said that he enjoys, much like myself, RE4 much better on the Wii than on the GameCube.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, he said that it really showed him that Wii controls do work for regular games. And this is a point that I keep trying to drive home.
Well, they
that
work
these
for
people
regular
who say,
games where you shoot things.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that you can, because Resident Evil 4 is a very, I don't want to say generic action game, but it does fit the mold quite well. And so I think that if you can graft Wii controls onto that game, which is definitely not made with the Wii controls in mind, and it works well, that it's definitely a testament to the fact that Wii controls do work for hardcore action games.
But it's a game about shooting.
Well, so are lots of action games.
Right, so what I'm saying is that it works for games, it's definitive that it definitely works for games where you shoot things, because it's a very, very natural interface for that sort of thing. But for something else, I really don't think it's been completely proven yet. Just to play devil's advocate.
Sure, sure. But going back to what you were saying, Wendy?
Yeah, and there were a couple places in the game where I went through the first and second time, and totally harmless, but the third time, there were some new instant death places that just totally caught me off guard. Do you remember there's this one part underground in the castle, you're going through the mine, and there's that one room where you have to go through those two giant dudes, and you can kill one of them by dropping them in the lava?
Right,
You guys remember that?
Yeah,
I remember that fight.
After you drop one of them in the lava, just before, as he's struggling and he sinks, if you get a little too close to the edge, he'll just pull you right back in.
Really?
Yeah, and when that happened, I was like, oh my god.
That's awesome.
Sucked.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that again.
I thought you were going to say he jumps out of the lava and scares you as a skeleton version of himself.
Oh, no, he just he's all red and melting and firing, and he just grabs you and pulls you right in, and you're dead.
That is sweet.
That was like a really, really cool, but a really, really, oh, crap moment.
Also frustrating.
Totally out of nowhere. So it just goes to show that even the third time through this game, there's still something new.
Definitely. Oh yeah, Resident Evil 4 is probably one of the most replayable games out there.
Absolutely, absolutely friggin'
And I still don't own it. I mean, I own it on GameCube, but I haven't bought the Wii version. And I probably should, but
when I get back to Tallahassee, I'll let you borrow it.
Okay, see, problem solved. I can play it without owning it. That's the best way to do it.
But that's stealing.
You
are stealing from Nintendo.
That's piracy.
It's time shifting.
Time shifting,
as the video industry would call it.
Sure. All right, folks, let's go on into community. And first up, we've got the forum hot topic, which is, would you pay for a Pokemon MMO?
No.
And
yes. In
yes.
a freaking heartbeat.
Yes, yes. Emphatically, yes.
I would pay WoW-level subscription prices. What is that, like $15 a month right now? I would pay
$15
a month
to play
Pokemon MMO.
Without even blinking an eye, I would pay for a Pokemon MMO.
Okay, I mean, I could see why people would want to. I wouldn't want to because I know we should be able to get it for free if such a thing would ever happen.
Oh, bull. The best MMOs you have to pay for.
Yeah, no,
well,
it's
no, but,
understood
no.
that you should be paying for it.
No, you don't understand the point, though. Who is the primary audience of Pokemon? Little kids, right?
Children, right.
Well, not necessarily.
No,
mostly
it is.
Younger kids, right?
There's a large community that is older, but the game is still primarily targeted and marketed at children.
Dude, have you
exactly.
seen those cults devoted to like EV training? Those people are hardcore.
Yeah, but
and
that's
30.
A very small percentage.
Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make here is the little kids don't have credit cards.
But their parents,
yeah, but their parents
do.
But their parents do.
Yeah, so why would their parents say, "Oh, I thought you could play online Wii for free"?
Because they want to shut their kids up.
Yeah.
Why do parents buy anything for their kids? To shut them up.
Yeah, they buy something for them once. They don't buy something for them at 15 bucks a month.
Well, I'm sure we can find a lot of parents out there who pay WoW subscriptions for their 16-year-old children.
I think there are a lot of parents
it.
Out there that play WoW themselves.
Well, yeah.
Think about it this way.
That's
they
why
bought
they
pay their
15.
They've bought their children the same game for $35 over and over again. They might as well pay a monthly fee.
What?
Or maybe they could work it out with the kids. Like, you know, okay, but you're not going to get any more allowance, but we'll pay for this.
I don't know. Yeah, it's totally impractical. You guys are making a stretch. I'm making a simple statement.
I'm just saying.
No, you make a very good point, Steven, but I still think that it would do extremely well, especially now that, you know, the original Pokemon market has grown up and does have credit cards.
Yeah.
Well, it would do extremely well if it was free.
Well,
no,
yeah,
but
they
didn't make
any money.
Okay, what are the foreign people saying?
No, they would
what
sell
the
more.
Say?
They would sell more copies if it were free, but they will make more money in the long-term investment if it's a paid per month franchise.
Yep. And
maybe.
With that in mind,
no, definitely.
Yeah.
$35. $35 once, or $35 once plus $15 12 more times.
Yeah.
Or maybe just once. After people realize they don't want to pay 15 bucks a month.
Well, that's
anymore.
Still $15 more.
Okay.
Anyway,
let's go on to what the forum people had to say. And first up, Tiamat1990 says, the bigger argument is, will it ever happen? And they say it will. She says that, or he or she says it will not, because Nintendo is all in this big friend code thing, and you know they don't. Mommy doesn't want little Johnny, you know, playing with 30-year-old pedophiles. And blah, 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 MMOs are the devil.
This is simple. All they need to do is get Chris Hansen from To Catch a Predator to join the game, and he'll just be walking around Kanto, you know, what are you doing here, sir? What really? I mean, why are you playing this game?
I wonder if you can buy Gator's sweater armor in that game.
Oh, zing.
We'll have to put up a link to that thread.
Yeah, that'll be the photo in the corner
about.
Of iTunes. Will be that Florida Gator fan on To Catch a Predator.
Anyway, so but you know, to Wendy's credit, Tiamat then says, but to answer the topic, no.
You know, I really, so. You know, as much as I would love to see a Pokemon MMO, I really do completely agree with this. Nintendo has said time and time again that they want their online to be both convenient and safe, which is sort of like an oxymoron in their terms.
Yeah.
But They will never drop these friend codes. It's just never going to happen. And, you know, with the anonymity of the internet, I mean, you can play Mario Kart, you know, peer-to-peer a game of Mario Kart with random people, but you can't talk to them while you play it if they're not on your friends list. And an MMO sort of requires talking. So without friend codes, you're not going to be talking. And without talking, you're not really going to be playing an MMO.
You know, actually, back when we did the Making the Jump special a couple months ago, Mike Gammon, he came up with a pretty interesting concept of how it could be possible. The gist of it is, it's kind of like you're just in your own world, but if you have somebody on your friend code list and you really want to play online against somebody, they go into your world and you go into their world.
So it's
you're just
Animal
going
Crossing?
Around the same. Yeah, I guess it would be kind of like Animal Crossing.
But then
I think
it's
the best,
not an MMO then.
Well, it would be a quasi MMO.
Not really.
I mean, there'd be computer players walking all around. You can bump into your own.
Yeah, but I can do that
friends.
Now, and I can do that now in Animal Crossing, and that's just peer-to-peer. It's not persistent, and it's not server-based, which means it's not an MMO.
Yes, but that's as good as you're probably going to get if you want
right.
to be safe.
So what you're saying
also,
is that we won't get an MMO.
Nope.
Also, unless I'm wrong here, I mean, one of the biggest themes in in the Pokemon TV show is meeting new people and making friends and having that whole adventure aspect. And if you do that, where everyone you meet in your world you already know, it kind of removes that.
Yeah.
That well, aspect, you know,
and,
of seeing...
And Pokemon already sort of does exactly what you just described, Steven, with the underground in, you know, Pokemon Diamond and Pearl.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Which is, no one does it because it's completely lame. Like, oh, you can run around and play tag or dig up fossils or wow.
Well, speaking of PvP, UERD says that one of the biggest problems is that the single-player Pokemon is basically all PvP. And, you know...
Well, it's all PvE, actually, but...
But yeah, player versus computer
environment,
or whatever, right? And you know, he goes on to say that little kids who play this game casually and stats obsessed people who take this game very seriously, you know, you're not going to have a very even environment.
That's not a problem. Basically, that's a non-issue. I mean, there are people who are level 60 in World of Warcraft, and there are people who are level 12, and you know, no one's going to issue a duel to somebody who's drastically a different level of them. And, you know,
yeah,
that's the way it would
true.
Work in Pokemon. In World of Warcraft, if you walk into the wrong area, you can get ganked pretty much right away. But if you're, you know, in a friendly area, you have to initiate a duel, and it's like, you know, do you want to fight me? Yes, no. And that's exactly how it would be, you know, and that's exactly how Pokemon works in its single-player environment. Except, well, you don't really have a choice when you're just walking by trainers and they spot you. But obviously there would be some sort of duel option in an MMO that won't ever really exist because of friend codes.
Very true, very true. Well, okay, that's our topic for the Pokemon MMO, and Mike and I both think that we would definitely pay for a Pokemon MMO. It's something that I would definitely like to see. Will it ever happen? Probably not, but, you know, we can always dream.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Moving on to our listener mail, we've got a question here from Brian, who wrote us a pretty long email, but...
essay, if you will.
Basically, yeah, I will paraphrase and say that, you know, with Nintendo's unprecedented success with the Wii, do you think Nintendo will continue to make games for the core gamer? And then lists a very long argument in what he thinks. But what do we think? Do we think that Nintendo will continue to make games for the core gamer?
God, how many times have we had this discussion in the past month?
yeah, many, many, many times. I mean, I would implore Brian to listen to the last two episodes, but in case he's lazy, yes. But enough, maybe.
Though I don't know why he seems to be upset that Project Hammer was canceled. If we read on later, in
so
his
am I. And I am pissed.
You guys did not. You two did not play the game clearly. Steven and I both played Project Hammer and can tell you that it was like a waggle fest. All you did was shake the remote and like, oh, this is totally lame.
Mike, why do you hate America?
Yeah, more like why do I hate NST? Which is not true, because NST has made some very good games, but Project Hammer was certainly not one of them, and it's very clear to me why it was indefinitely shelved.
Aw. Well, I just hope that Disaster Day of Christ didn't suffer the same fate.
Well, I'm sure that's kicking around somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe. We didn't see anything of it at E3, so that kind of
But anyway,
me.
I think, to answer Brian's actual question, Nintendo is certainly going to keep making games for the core gamer. It's just that it seems that they will probably be making less of them because they're splitting their resources, which is exactly what we've been saying on this podcast for like a month.
Right, and I think they're definitely going to continue to make core games because it's still making them money. Phantom Hourglass has sold like 500,000 copies in Japan already. New Super Mario Brothers sold like what, like 14 million copies?
This was brought up on, I think it might have been Retronauts, that Phantom Hourglass, while still for the core gamer, or maybe Johnny said this last week, that it's very clearly being altered and changed to have a wider appeal.
Well, that might be true, but it's not done at a detriment to its core value.
It's not.
No.
So I think it's definitely a game that a hardcore player can pick up and still really enjoy because it's very deep, very involved, and I think at that point, it still can be considered a hardcore game.
Yeah. Well, in that case, we see that's the difference. I think there's a difference between a core game or an enthusiast or a enthusiast game and a actually hardcore game. Like, I would never consider Mario a hardcore game, though lots of people would, because there are lots of people seem that a hardcore game is just a game made for gamers, but Mario is not a game made for gamers, it is a game made for everybody. It just happens to be so excellent that it appeals to everybody, including the hardcore demographic and the casual demographic.
So what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing is wrong with that.
So why are people arguing that all we're getting is Mario instead of a game like, you know, more games like Metroid Prime 3 Corruption or Smash Brothers?
Because people want the variety in what they want to consume.
Well,
I mean,
it's what happens.
You can't
is,
just
when you look at you know
you can't just play Mario all the time. You need that you know that something a little deeper, something that goes a little more beyond the surface, and that's what Metroid does.
Well, I think what it is what it's a lot of it is maybe I guess I would call it platform jealousy, where you look at something like the Xbox 360, and there is a massive game or two coming out every month, and every single one of them is geared towards a hardcore gamer. Now, let's say there are two really huge games coming out every month between now and December. So that's August, September, October, November, December. That's 10 hardcore, like really hardcore games from third parties and first parties for the rest of the year. Nintendo's yeah. got two, three. They've got three. They've got three games over 5 months. Microsoft's got 10 games over 5 months. I mean, it's just there's a disparity in the amount of
four
hardcore
four
titles coming out. What's the fourth?
Fire Emblem.
Okay, but I guess true. I guess when I say hardcore games, I mean hardcore games that also have a mass appeal.
Okay, but I mean I totally see your point. We all want you and me, we all want games that are on the 360 to come over to Wii. That's just not going to happen.
No, I just
in
I don't
want to
see that.
Capacity.
I
want to
see the quantity of titles. Like if Wii is such the third if Wii is the third party darling right now, that is an undisputed fact, then why are there so many few huge games on it? It's because they're not trying to make huge games.
Well, they're doing what Nintendo's doing. Nintendo's making money off of the new Blue Ocean casual gamer market, and third parties have to realize, oh wait, we have to make money off of them too while the getting's good.
Right, but they're not. Yep. They're not also. Nintendo is doing a decent job of serving both markets, but the third parties, for the most part, are not.
The third parties
they
are
picking
are,
one or the other.
Yeah, the third parties, ever since the N64, probably, they've been a little clueless on how to exactly take best advantage of the Nintendo audience, just because since the N64, since the third parties just completely fell off the face of the earth on the N64, it was do what Nintendo is doing, and that's how you make money on a Nintendo system.
Yeah.
And until they get that out of their head, it's gonna keep happening. And I hope that it'll get out of their head this generation, but considering how Nintendo is being successful, I don't think it's gonna happen.
We'll be probably exploring this that topic that Steven just brought up a little more in our feature.
Maybe.
Correct. So with that in mind, we'll be taking a quick break, and when we come back, we've got the news to discuss. Okie doke, folks, and we are back for the news. First up, Virtual Console Mondays. Wave Race 64 on the N64, Adventures of Lolo on
fantastic.
The NES.
Fantastic. Wave Race.
Mike loves it.
Fantastic.
And Galaga 90 on the TurboGrafx-16. Now, Wendy, you are playing Galaga 90, correct?
Yep.
And what is the difference between Galaga 90 and the original Galaga?
I can quantify it for you. It's 90.
Oh, interesting. But,
no.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, the difference is basically it's still Galaga gameplay, and that's the most mm-hmm. important thing, and that's why it's
right.
awesome.
Of course.
But there's just, like, new types of enemies, better, shinier graphics and backgrounds. Depending on how well you do, you get branching paths.
Yeah.
Let's see what else is there. You can get you know how you can start with a double ship.
Yeah.
And if you do something right, you can get a triple ship.
Yeah.
So you can shoot like three bullets at once, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
It's just a shinier, prettier version of Galaga.
Is it better? Would you say definitively, like if you were going to choose, you should pick Galaga 90?
You can't say anything's better than the original Galaga because it's Galaga. It's something different. It's nice.
I was always a Galaxian fan, but that's probably because my doctor's office had Galaxian.
Galaxian is like
it's knockoff Galaga. I know, but I really liked it because it was. I probably never played Galaga, and I'd only played Galaxian, so I was like, this is pretty cool.
I could play the original Galaga, or I could play Galaga 90. They're just different games.
Now, just so that no one makes the same mistake they did with Street Fighter 2, i.e. me, are there any other updated versions of Galaga that may or may not be coming to Virtual Console?
Well, they did have like the Galaga arrangement on one of the Namco Museum compilations. I don't know if that would ever come to Virtual Console because I don't know if that was on any classic system.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong with any Galaga. I mean,
that's very true. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still Galaga, and the gameplay is very much the same. So
Galaga's
if you have
great.
If you've got one, you got them all.
Pretty much.
Yep. All right, moving on to the actual news. SmashBrothers.com has revealed Adventure Mode, the Subspace Emissary. It's going to be a full-fledged side-scrolling action game starring all of the characters of Smash Brothers, and it will actually borrow story elements from the various game series, which is very, very cool.
What did Sakurai say on the blog that each character will carry the weight on his shoulders?
The weight of his personal plot lines.
You know what? The stuff
lines.
That he writes, I mean, considering that it probably comes out crazy and then is translated, I mean, I don't put, like, a lot of thought into anything that he writes on that site. I mean, while entertaining, it just sounds like he's completely crazy while he writes it.
That's awesome, though. It's very, I enjoy it a lot.
It's certainly very entertaining, but I think this whole Subspace Emissary thing is interesting. I think I just don't want to get my hopes up too much that it's, you know, because I'm afraid it could be a little less than what people are expecting.
Well,
people are already expecting these huge branching paths where if you go through one character, it's going to be completely different. And no, it's probably going to be a lot like Adventure Mode in Smash Brothers, where it's basically, you know, a series of platforming levels, and it won't really be different for every character.
I don't know about that, because the way it sounds like on the Smash Brothers blog is that each character is going to get their own thing.
Right. Well, I think that what that might amount to is, like, different lines of text in between levels.
I don't know. The screenshots dictate otherwise.
You will definitely see more than just lines of text, because Sakurai said that there will be, quote-unquote, a bunch of cutscenes that move the story along.
Right, but who's to say they won't be the same for all characters?
Oh, well, I don't think that... I'm definitely not thinking they're going to make, like, 20 different adventure modes. That's definitely for sure. But I do think that it's going
to be
very much...
It'll probably be a different intro and a different outro for every character in adventure mode or something like
perhaps.
That.
Perhaps.
I don't know. I guess I like being the Debbie Downer of our group when it comes to stuff like
you
this.
You really do, Mike. You're bringing us down. Come on, be happy.
Hey, I got some good Smash Brothers news, though.
Oh, yeah?
They also announced that in a roundabout way from Eiji Onuma that Ganon and Sheik are going to be...
That's right.
Ganon and Ganondorf, excuse me.
I saw that Sheik
are going to be in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, our good friend Billy from Game Informer somehow managed to eke out from Onuma that his team has been working with the Smash Brothers team, providing them assets specifically for Link as well as Zelda and Sheik and Ganondorf as well, which is previously unknown. So that's pretty much a solid confirmation that those two characters will be in the game.
Maybe they're just pulling our leg.
No, I don't think so. I mean,
they're making the character,
it.
And they're not going to put him in there. They're just going to dangle him. Downloadable content.
Yeah. It sounds pretty solid. Now, what my question is I think this time we're going to see Sheik as an entirely separate character, because not many people really play with both Sheik and Zelda. Like not many people really, really switch that often.
I don't know. I think they might just keep him the same person.
Maybe they will. I think there's a 50% chance that it could go either way with that. I'll be interested to see
Of course there's a 50% chance if it could go either way.
There's a 50% chance something might happen at some point.
Though I'm really wondering is, will Ganondorf come back as a Captain Falcon clone, or will he come back with a new moveset, or will he come back and Captain Falcon maybe won't come back?
I think Captain Falcon will definitely come back, because Samurai Goro is there. And if Samurai Goro is there...
And Captain Falcon was also in the original Smash Brothers. And I think everyone from the original is pretty much a guaranteed spot for the rest of the franchise.
They'll keep Ganondorf in the game. They'll tweak his moves a little bit. Ganondorf and Captain Falcon were totally...
They played totally differently.
But they played totally different to begin with. I think they'll give him a little more tweaks, maybe give Ganondorf some moves from Twilight Princess.
I think they'll shift up his set of B moves, his special moves. I think those will shift entirely, probably.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah,
but the rest of, as far as the physical fighting, the A set of moves, I think that'll stay basically the same as to what it is now, which is already even though it's the same, almost the same motions as Captain Falcon, they come out completely differently.
Yep.
I'm just really disappointed that Midna isn't going to be in Smash Brothers.
Oh God.
I would totally rock.
It would be cool is if you could turn Link into a wolf in Smash Brothers now, but that won't.
Badass, but it won't happen.
That won't happen.
Though it would be freaking rock.
Hey guys, you know what?
Hmm.
4 more months. Woo!
Yeah. And didn't they also... They also announced a new level this week, right? Did they announce a new level since our last recording?
Oh, yeah, the Castle Keep.
The which one?
The Fire Emblem Castle?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, you know what? I was excited about that level because finally it wasn't one of those flat platform levels that all the other ones have been.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
It seems to, change. Like, you start on top of the castle, and then it crumbles, and you fall in, and the same thing, and then you can break the statues, which also, the same thing you can do in the Kid Icarus level, it looked like a good level. You know, it was a main platform with smaller sub-platforms, like a lot of the Smash Bros. Levels are, except they weren't arranged in a generic way. There was one sort of hanging below, and all of the platforms were breakable, and it looked like you could stand on the clouds like you could in the old Yoshi levels. You could stay on the clouds for a couple seconds, and then they would disappear.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Smash Bros., it's going to be awesome. We all know it's going to be awesome. We're all going to play it to death.
Oh, and we also, they announced Ike this week from Fire Emblem.
Which is awesome because I'm a big fan of Path of Radiance.
This was a big Smash Brothers week.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Now the question is, are we going to see both Marth and Roy return? Because
We're not going to see either.
I don't think we're going to see either.
I think we could still see Marth, but I think Roy is completely...
No.
Roy was the strong version of Marth, and from what it sounds like, Ike is definitely going to be a hard-hitting character. He's not going to be fast.
Well, here's why Marth won't be back, because he looks too much like Ike.
This is true.
Marth wears white,
and
though.
You know, they're gonna be two Fire Emblem characters. Listen up, they're gonna be two Fire Emblem characters. The other one's gonna
It's gonna be Soth.
What?
He's the main character of Goddess of Dawn, and he was also one of the side characters.
Gonna be that one female character that was in the trailer.
Who are you talking about?
I think we'll see Marth return because Marth is one of everyone's favorite characters to play as in Smash Brothers.
Don't see it happening, but what? But what character? What female character are you talking about?
She was she did the thing in the trailer, the beginning of the trailer.
In which trailer?
Which trailer?
The first trailer.
For Smash Brothers or for Fire Emblem?
For Fire Emblem.
Okay.
You're talking about the Goddess of Dawn trailer?
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the main female lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's possible. I just think that Soth would be more likely because
we need more girl power.
I think we'll see a new Fire Emblem character. We have Ike, and I think we'll also see a classic Fire Emblem character, and I think it's definitely going to be Marth because Marth is quote a top tier Smash Brothers character, and everyone loves him, and they will not get rid of him.
He's a top tier Smash Brothers melee character.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's going to be in Brawl.
No, but I think because
I think
because so many people use him in
melee,
he
will
be in
Brawl. That's enough Smash Brothers. I'm right, you're wrong. Let's go on to the news.
Ouch.
Thank you, Wendy. It's almost as if you're the host of this show.
Well, now, I do kind of run things around here.
Well, he says we have to move on, and so that's what the boss man says. That's what the host man does. All right. Guitar Hero could see more peripherals, says the Jenko analyst group.
I think this is shot in the dark analyst bull crap.
But there is a hint of sense to it, because what if they don't do that? But who's going to play Guitar Hero as they
all
keep
the
releasing new songs on Rock Band every week?
All the people who can't afford Rock Band. We had this huge argument. We had this huge argument / discussion last week about how Guitar Hero 3 is definitely going to outsell Rock Band.
Wait, what do you mean? Can't afford Rock Band? You can afford the game and the controller. One controller.
Okay, yeah, I
you
suppose
you have to get everything.
It'll probably be another like $100 bundle for the game and the controller.
Okay,
fine. Just like
basically, I will sum up both points very shortly, very easily for everybody. And here's how it happens. Guitar Hero has the name recognition, the brand recognition. However, it doesn't have the big EA push, the big MTV library, and as such, it will not be as good of a game. Even if they add more instruments, it still will not be as good as Rock Band. However, Guitar Hero will probably sell more because it's got the brand recognition.
At least in the short term, Guitar Hero will definitely sell more.
And it's also got the wireless controllers.
Well, so does Rock
Band. Badass. Well, yeah.
Rock Band doesn't.
Yeah, it does. They've confirmed wireless controllers.
Oh, dude, it's going to have wireless controllers. Come on.
Rock Band has wireless controllers. They haven't been showing them because they're not finished yet. They've been using wired ones at demos, but they are doing wireless controllers.
There you go. So, but I mean, if Guitar Hero had more peripherals, would it help? Yeah, sure.
It could
probably help
sell
a few more copies of the game. Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. I mean, it never hurts to have more options.
But
I think that's what counts.
I really think this is total BS. There's really no proof. It's just some analysts saying, "Oh, Harmonix is doing this, so obviously Activision's going to follow in their footsteps." Like, it's just...
Though...
I don't buy it.
I do think that Rock Band and Guitar Hero can coexist, because it seems like with 3, Neversoft is making a real departure for the series by making it more game-like. Like, you have boss battles now. And I think, since Harmonix seems much more reliant on the bare bones of the gameplay, I think that they could definitely carve out their own...
I can't agree with you on that
more story-oriented,
at all.
You know? I definitely think they can both serve their own audience.
Guitar Hero 2 was developed by Harmonix, and the encores in that game are essentially boss battles, and it's basically a copy of what they did with Amplitude, where you would play four songs at a difficulty level, and then it would unlock the fifth song, which was actually called the boss song of that area. So they've already, Harmonix has already been doing boss battles, except they haven't, like, done something crazy where it's Slash and he actually changes the game as you play it.
Right. So I'm just saying that there is ways to change both games in which they can coexist peacefully and both be good games. That's all.
They are both going to be.
It doesn't always have to be one or the other.
I saw some videos. I saw a video. The guys from Score Hero got a sneak peek at the Dragon Force song that's going to be in Guitar Hero 3, and they put up a video of it on Expert, and it is bar none the most insane looking song I've ever seen in any Guitar Hero game. Ever. I mean, it's a bonus song, so already it's going to be harder than the regular songs, because all the bonus songs are. And it's just, it's 8 minutes long, and you're pretty much moving the strum on every quarter note, or every half note for the entire song. It's going to be eight minutes of breaking your wrist, and I think, you know, that certainly lends the fact that Guitar Hero 3 will definitely be a good game, even without Harmonix.
Well, speaking of legacy franchises, Quake Arena has been announced for the DS by John Carmack at the recent QuakeCon.
Wait, are you sure that was this QuakeCon?
Yeah.
Because didn't Nintendo announce Quake for Metroid, like, when the DS launched?
What? What are you talking about? Are you making a Metroid Prime Hunters joke?
Metroid Prime Hunters is Quake. So why would we need another Quake game on the DS?
Because it's actually a Quake franchise that is not owned by Nintendo and as such has not yet been exploited on the DS yet.
Boom! And that's the answer to our
It'll be
question.
Interesting to see how it turns out. I mean, I think it'll be really, probably turn out really, really well, because these guys know what the hell they're doing when they netcode a first-person shooter. Because they invented it.
And, I mean, the Metroid Prime Hunters control scheme was very good. They could definitely, you know, apply
steal
some
it.
Sort of... Yeah, that's one way of saying it.
It'll be a very similar setup, no doubt.
I was going to say apply it with new mechanics, but sure, you can say steal it. And, you know, with the obviously Quake, you know, it's going to have awesome maps. Maybe a map editor would be sweet.
Ooh,
that would be nice.
Share your maps online with your friends.
That sounds hot.
That sounds freaking sweet.
With your friends,
so
as long as you have friend codes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that doesn't mean it won't be cool, though. So
it could be
definitely
good.
Look out for that. I will definitely be looking out for that. It could be very good, you know. John Carmack definitely is always used to working with, you know, big tech, but he's definitely been known to also work on lesser machines like his mobile phone game, so, you know.
Yeah, I have one wish, that's 8-player online.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
8 players online. I don't know,
Mario
maybe.
Mario Kart does. Yeah, Mario Kart does 8 players online, doesn't it? Or is it 4?
No, it does 4.
I mean Nintendo could only manage 4, but, you know, that's Nintendo. Yeah. I'm sure
that the net code,
I mean,
like I said, the
Nintendo
net code from the Quake team will clearly be much better.
Yeah. Quake Arena DS could be cool. We don't know yet. Keep an eye out for it. Last up on the news docket today, Konami's Power Pro Baseball Series is coming to the U.S. via 2K Sports. It's a big, big seller in Japan. The new ones came out a couple weeks ago.
Now, this is...
200 and something thousand
this
copies.
This is the game with the
really,
almost
really
me-type looking characters that have giant heads, right?
Big head baseball.
Okay.
Me support confirmed? I don't know. Maybe.
You need to have, like, DK mode on your Miis, like, more so than they have already, for them to look okay with the game.
Yeah, it's coming to the Wii and PS2 when it comes to Americas, and, you know, it's always good to have more baseball games on the Wii.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Sure. I mean, we need more sports games on the Wii. Wii Sports isn't enough, you know? You need more.
Yeah, so, you gotta juice up our sports games.
Well, Madden's out,
definitely.
A week, so...
Yeah, but I don't know. I think this is really more arcadey than Sim.
Oh, yeah.
So
you know what? You know what?
Simulation. The giant heads of the ball players in the game accurately reflect the state of today's major league. It's the most realistic baseball game out there.
You know,
well
it would be
done,
nice.
Sir.
I would like
well
to
done.
See. It would work really well on the Wii too. Is I would like to see Midway bring back NFL Blitz.
Ooh,
Blitz,
well they
Blitz and
they
slug
did
hits.
Well, didn't they do that already?
They tried. Well, they
Blitz the
they,
league.
They
didn't Blitz the league come
Wii,
out on Wii?
They tried a couple of years ago to
it did already, I think.
Resurrect the Blitz series.
No, didn't Blitz League already come out on Wii?
I don't
Wii?
Think so.
You're thinking Blitz the League.
Oh yeah, Blitz. No, I'm talking about NFL.
Which sounds a lot like Blitz.
I am talking
the
about NFL Blitz. Like, I mean, obviously, it won't,
but they
it
can't
won't have an
do NFL Blitz
license,
anymore.
But I'm not talking about what was originally supposed to be an ESPN Playmakers, the video game, which would have been freaking incredible, by the way, but ended up being Blitz the League. No, I would.
Which actually isn't that
I've
bad.
I've heard it's actually pretty good,
it,
but
I, like
I would like to see just, you know, strip all that macho-ness out of it and just bring it back to its arcade roots of just Blitz. And they could just call it Blitz. Mm-hmm. They don't even need football in the title. Everyone knows what Blitz is.
Blitz Wii. I don't know. All right. Well, folks, when we come back, we're going to be talking about our feature, which is Nintendo's third-party relations. You definitely don't want to miss it, so stay tuned. And we're back for our feature topic, Nintendo's third-party relations, and specifically the Wii, because the DS is already doing really great, so we're basically talking about the Wii here. And Mike feels very strongly about this. Wendy feels very strongly about this. Hopefully, I'll be some sort of intermediary. I can moderate this conversation. Mike, go ahead and turn on the Wine Fest.
All right, yeah, the Wine Fest, if you want to call it that. I'm going to open up my bottle of wine. The Wii is getting a lot of third-party support, and that's a good thing. It's getting, you know, a level almost comparable to what I think the DS is getting, but Nintendo's third-party relations are still in the toilet. The only reason the Wii has any third-party support is because it's the dominant platform. That's Nintendo's whole strategy, is sell a lot of hardware units and the third parties will come. They're not actually doing anything to entice them to join the family other than being the dominant platform. Whereas Microsoft and Sony clearly have very good third-party relations and rely very heavily on third-party franchises and titles to flesh out their already strong first-party title lineups.
Wendy, your response?
Well, that's true. Microsoft and Sony kind of have to do that, because if they kind of shut out the third parties like Nintendo is doing, they wouldn't have that many games on their platforms. Nintendo has a great advantage in the fact that they're the biggest, if you kind of, you know, ignore EA, they're the biggest developer publisher in the world.
Right.
So of course they can support their own system with their own games. And Nintendo is in a very interesting position in the fact that they need to work with the companies they are competing against, because they got the hardware side that they want to support developers to make Wii games, but on the software side, you also have to release Nintendo games against, you know, third-party games. So there's competition
but,
there.
But the question is, why don't Sony and Microsoft run into this problem? Sony and Microsoft also have they're not the largest, but they have extremely large self-developing, self-publishing systems themselves, but they don't ever seem to run into this problem.
Of course they won't when, like, you know, Microsoft releases Halo 3.
I mean, but
they've got their own big games. But the thing is, Microsoft knows that it's not constructive. It's not in their best interest to, you know, take it all for themselves. They know, Microsoft knows, it needs all the help it can get. And Sony knows it needs all the help it can get. Nintendo knows, well, we really don't need their help because we make a lot of money no matter what.
But they certainly appreciate it because they're helping.
I think that the core of Mike's argument and what's really the problem that a lot of people have with the Wii and Nintendo systems in general is they want to know, when will it be like it was on the NES and the SNES when you had a plethora of Nintendo
when can
titles
I go back
and
to
third-party
the Super
titles?
Nintendo,
when will it be like that again? And why isn't it like that?
Ever since the Dream Team on the N64, Nintendo sort of got burned and they, like, you know, they had this idea where we're just going to work with a very select group of developers, and it was really them just lying to themselves because nobody else wanted to work with them. That's exactly what it is. What happened to the Super Nintendo era, where if you look at the Super Nintendo lineup, it was an even matching of first-party and third-party titles, which is exactly what we see today on the Xbox platform and on the PlayStation platform. I mean, Sony and Microsoft have clearly taken that playbook, and they're still using it, where Nintendo has shifted the game, and they are sort of like, if you want to make games for our system, you can, but we're not really going to help you that much, and, you know, don't bother releasing anything the same week we do, because we're just going to crush it. We're not going to help you and tell you when our games are coming out and sort of work hand-in-hand with you to build a lineup that is best for the platform. We just want to build a lineup that is best for us.
Exactly, and I think that is why, I don't like saying this, but I think it's actually true, that I don't think we're ever going to see the third-party strength that we did, you know, NES, SNES. Just because, I mean, Nintendo has always looked out for themselves first. And the only reason why there were so many great NES games and probably also SNES games is because Nintendo just cracked down hard on anybody who tried to release a crap game on their system. The reason why they were so good back then is because Nintendo wouldn't let you release something that was bad.
Oh, that's not foolish. There were plenty of bad
games. Third-party titles also used to get a lot more coverage in magazines like Nintendo Power. I mean, they did a full player's guide on Final Fantasy, and like the spreads on Chrono Trigger and, you know, stuff like that were just insane. But we don't get that anymore. I mean, we get, you know, here's a couple of pages dedicated to Resident Evil 4 because it's a very important title for our lineup. But, you know, here's twice as many pages dedicated to, you know, a first-party game that's nowhere near as big.
Well, and Wendy, I mean, also, I mean, you're saying that, yeah, you know, there's never going to really be like that again, so blah, 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 whatever. But I'm saying is, why are we excusing it? Why is it that we have to roll over and let it happen? Why can't we complain about it?
Well, we can't complain about it, but
well,
they're
we
not going to do anything.
About it. Well, there's the other side of the coin, too, is that third parties are in this mindset, too. They're like, well, we can't release anything on the Nintendo system because it won't sell. So, I mean, this happened on the GameCube.
Well, I think that's a bit of a false assumption there, Steven, because the assumption there was that we can't release anything on a Nintendo platform because it won't sell, because the platform and the user base isn't there, because the user base is strictly for Nintendo fans. But with the Wii, that's completely thrown out the window, because it's clearly, you know, a system that is selling to people who do not have an established relationship as a Nintendo fan. So they're open to anything. You know, look at Raving Rabbids sold madly because it was just fun. And I think what happened there is that instead of third parties seeing what we've seen in the past with the N64 and the GameCube, instead they've seen, oh, the market out there is the blue ocean. You know, we want to make mini game fests and stuff like that, which is certainly true. I mean, it is, but that's all third parties are making. There's not many big third party titles on the horizon that aren't, you know, geared towards the new audience.
Okay, but that's the point. You see, I said this earlier in the podcast that third parties only are going to do what Nintendo is doing. Nintendo is opening them up to this new broad audience, so third parties are going to follow exactly what Nintendo's doing. So,
this is true, because, you know, that's this is the... Johnny has written, I think, a couple editorials on that topic, where in the case of why did people stop making sports games for the GameCube was because Nintendo wasn't making sports games for the GameCube. You know, the first-party lineup defines the platform, essentially, and everyone else just builds on that definition.
Yes, so, but that's the thing. If Nintendo is releasing these really good games, you know, the Marios, the Metroids, the Smash Bros, the Zeldas, why aren't third parties?
Yeah, exactly. Third parties have jumped all on the blue ocean, and Nintendo's jumped all on the blue ocean, but Nintendo is, as much as we seem to complain about it, they are still supporting the hardcore gamer, you know, but the third parties, they don't seem like enough is coming out of them for that market.
Exactly my point. So why aren't the third parties, you know, vindicating this argument that, oh, Nintendo's relations are bad with third parties?
I think it's because we haven't really seen, outside of Zelda, a hardcore blockbuster on Wii. And so they don't think the audience is there.
Yeah, from anyone. Well, that's the thing. And also, they haven't really... It takes a lot longer to develop one of those games, so maybe we'll start seeing them next year. But as of right now, you know, these Blue Ocean games are a lot cheaper and quicker to make, so that's what we're getting.
Yeah, and that's...
Definitely, I mean,
exactly my point.
Yeah, when you look at it, the third party thinks the Wii is a really great way to make a lot of money really quickly, and we can use these cheaper games that sell better to finance our large big budget games on the Xbox and PlayStation.
Well, not really finance directly, but balance the sheets.
Yeah, balance the sheets.
How do you think Square Enix is paying for Final Fantasy 13? The answer, Dragon Quest IX, you know, the 15th observation training game from Square Enix on DS. Like, over and over and over again. That's how it is.
But they would do best to, you know, satisfy the Wii market more by using that money raked in from the Blue Ocean games to instead finance a big budget Wii game, because the Wii's got a larger user base.
And you know what?
Well, will by the end of the year.
That will eventually come. I mean, just look at the DS. Dragon Quest IX on the DS. That's all the proof you need.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody thought all the huge games were going to go to the PSP. Oh man, the PSP is just going to wipe the floor of the DS. Blah 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 blah. And now Dragon Quest IX on the DS. That's the biggest big budget DS game, I guess you could say. There will be third party anyway. So the Wii is going to get there. I'm sure we'll get there. It's going to be the market leader eventually. There's little doubting that. And once you're the market leader, it doesn't matter exactly who your audience is for. You have the most systems in most people's homes. Third parties are going to start realizing that not all of them are Blue Ocean gamers. There's got to be the regular core audience still there. So they will make the big games for it, mm-hmm. Just not right now, because everyone buying them is apparently the Blue Ocean crowd.
Dude, I think at the end of the day, the real winner of next gen is DS.
No, the real winner is Nintendo, because they're dominating, they're completely dominating on the handheld front, and they're on their way on the console front.
Yeah, so there you are. Nintendo dominance, but third party still not really there. I mean, it's a very
Nintendo,
strange situation.
Also, Nintendo dominance in ways we wish they would not.
We've been waiting for so long for Nintendo to return to top. Now that they're there, I mean,
I do not like the path they took to get there.
Does it feel? I was wondering this to myself the other day. Does it feel like they've won? Really?
Not for me. No, it feels like I'm the winner because I can play a lot of quirky games on my Wii, but when I want to play Gears of War, I turn on the Xbox.
Yeah, and I think that's how a lot of people feel. Really,
I think the two systems complement
each other very well.
Each other very, very well, because they have completely different lineups that both I enjoy greatly. Even though I haven't really touched the Wii in months.
Well, you play a lot of. I remember you playing a lot of Kirby's Dream Course, so you can't really say that.
I guess, yeah, but I haven't touched the actual Wii, the games actually made for the system. I don't know. In forever, the last game I got was SSX.
I've been playing Everybody Votes like 3 times a week.
I was hardcore addicted to that, but I stopped.
Eventually. I stopped playing Everybody Votes when I missed one.
Yeah, me too. I missed one.
My perfect score
is
ruined.
That's over.
Done.
I didn't care if it was a perfect score. I just wanted to make sure I voted in everything, whether I got it right or wrong, or. You know,
it's nice. You only have to check it like once every week, not even like once every 10 days.
Yeah, but
so
I let it sit
anyways,
there.
Anyways, we're getting off track. Third parties. Yeah. Okay, let's get the bottom line. Third parties on Wii.
Well, I think we got what to it. Them? It's that they're there. They're just not making the games we want, but hopefully they will eventually.
I think that it'll be better than GameCube in that you will have more games to choose from as far as third party goes. And I think that there are definitely hardcore games coming. Will it be, you know, will it rival the hardcore libraries of the PS3 and Xbox 360? Probably not, but I think it'll still be better than GameCube, and if you're a GameCube-only gamer, it'll only look better for you.
Yeah, it could be much
that's
worse.
True.
It could be much, much worse. Yeah,
I think that the isolation of the Wii from the PS3 and the 360, it's good and bad in ways that we've talked about numerous times, but I think that because the Wii isn't directly competing with the PS3 and 360, it is, but it's not really. Publishers that want to put games on it are going to have to start competing with each other directly, and you might start seeing the race for quality. I doubt that. You know, that's why the SNES games back in the day were so good, because everybody was trying to one-up each other. I just think that third parties will start, you know, paying attention and getting their act together, like EA already has, and just bring really good games to the Wii. I saw it at E3. They're doing that. They're starting to do that, I should say. And, you know, a couple years, Wii owners should be happy with a third-party lineup. Or I should say satisfied with a third-party lineup. I don't think they'll ever be happy. But they'll be,
one's ever happy.
Yeah, they'll be satisfied with a third-party lineup, and a question mark for Nintendo a year from half now. But we'll just see how it goes.
Well,
we seem to say that
topic
a lot on this show. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. But do we ever have any answers?
Well, the Wii's not even a year old yet, so we are still in its early stages, and things will definitely change a lot. For better or worse, we do not know.
So, once again on this show, we'll have to say, wait and see.
Wait and see.
Alrighty, folks.
See.
Remember, if you want to send us an email.
Wait and bitch.
Wait.
That's my approach.
Wait and bitch. One bitch. Do whatever you need to. Remember, folks, if you need to send us email, that's rfn@nintendoreport.com. I cannot stress enough the fact that we do not get enough email.
Yeah, send
more
it.
Email.
I get lots
we'll
of email.
Freaking
in
answer it.
Well, I know, I'm jealous of how much mail Wendy gets for that mailbag.
You know, I will
screw
guarantee
the mailbag.
I will make a personal guarantee, no matter how ridiculous the question is, or how off topic, or how obscene it is, I will answer the first email that comes in after this podcast gets posted. We will assuredly
He'll do it,
answer.
Folks. He'll do it.
You can ask me, you know, if I would like to sleep with your mama, and I will give you a straight up answer as long as you include a picture.
Yes. I don't think you'll even need the picture.
I'm typing you a question right now, Mike.
Yeah, Nintendo World Report staff are obviously excluded from this mini contest.
I just sent you a question.
I don't know if Mike will screw your mom, Wendy.
It's my guarantee. First question that comes in on Thursday when this gets posted. First person who hears this sends a question in, answered.
There we go. Also, you will find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe to us, review us, whatever you need to do. Also, head over to Dig the podcast. Nobody ever digs the podcast. I check it like every week, see if anyone digs it.
Yeah,
I think everybody already digged it. That's why.
Well, do we only have 14 listeners? I mean, geez.
Dig is not really. I mean, I think Dig does podcasts, but it is not a podcast hub like iTunes is. So.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying we can. There are other podcasts that we have more listeners than that have more digs on Dig.
If you look at all the podcasts with ton of digs, it's all stuff that the Revision 3 fan base is connected to. So.
I don't know about that, but whatever. Dig it. Always dig it. All right, folks, that's the end of this week's show. Next week, maybe John Lindemann, maybe Evan Bitchfield.
Well, almost certainly Evan Bitchfield, but if we are lucky,
yes,
we'll get his foil in John Lindemann.
John Lindemann is here in Atlanta where I am. I will knock on his door and say, you need to be in this podcast. Nowsville. All right, folks. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Wendy, for stopping by. And once again, this is Carl Castaneda, your host. See you next week.